Growing concerns LSU defensively. Who's going to play? Who's not going to play in Nashville? We'll get the very, very latest. Huge matchup as the Sun Belt meets the MAC. Two teams picked very high in their respective conferences. A showdown Saturday afternoon in Athens, Ohio. And the Schwab joins us to talk about another week in the NFL. Can the Saints, who are staying out on the West Coast, figure out a way without number nine to steal a win in Seattle? All these stories and more today. 50 days from now, we'll be tipping it off in hoops for the Tigers. It's Thursday, September 19th, 2019.
I think this is a guy that's stepped in at Washington State after Luke finished up a great career there. He's ready for his opportunity. I think he's ready for this opportunity. He wants to be aggressive. He'll scramble around. He's a good athlete. Quick release. So it'll be a good challenge for him.
You know, I think, man, we're hungry every week. You know, if last week there was something we thought we could do better to win, you know, we would have done it. So, you know, we're attacking it just like we have been. But that sense of urgency is definitely there.
Cole, the kick and the pitch. Swing and a miss. Got him on a changeup. Garrett Cole, 300 strikeouts. First Astros pitcher to do that in 33 years.
Remember Garrett Cole pitching against LSU in college baseball? Boy, as he developed, the Astros keep on winning, setting up quite a stretch run to this regular season. They're already at the century mark and rolling. And we heard from Mike Vrabel, the coach, and Gardner Minshew, the quarterback, as we head to week number three of the NFL. Jacksonville at 0-2 without Nick Foles. Minshew takes over, taking on the Tennessee Titans, who are at 1-1. We also have a really good matchup, college football tonight, down in New Orleans. The Houston Cougars at 1-2 taking on the Tulane Green Wave. The Green Wave hosting with two wins in their three matchups so far this season. So Tulane gets in the spotlight of the college football world tonight. And with that, we say great good afternoon. It's a Friday Eve, huh? You feel it? Thursday, the 19th day of the 9th month of the 19th year of 2000. My main man, CD, back in the master control suite. He is spinning the tunes, pushing all the buttons, getting his fantasy picks in for this weekend of the NFL. Yours truly, Studio 1A. He's in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, which houses KLWB, which is 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com. So a busy day planned for you and yours. Coming up in about 10 minutes, Brody Miller will join us to talk all things LSU. Defensive lineman out, you lose a safety, you're going on the road. Thank goodness it's Vanderbilt, but you still got to play. I've seen it before, Vanderbilt. Heavy underdog, fought LSU tooth and nail. LSU snuck out back in the day, 1997, if I recall correctly, with a 7-6 win. A bizarre game. Bizarre game. In fact, Cecil Collins was the nation's leading rusher. Early in the game, he broke his ankle, done for the year. Jerry DiNardo's first return trip back to Nashville. He was the head coach at Vandy before coming to LSU. LSU scores a touchdown in the third period to break a scoreless tie. Vandy comes back late, scores a touchdown. Their coach, Woody Woodenhofer, decides to go for two and the win. And then, I mean, in the most bizarre of bizarre ways, back-to-back delay of game penalties. Are you kidding me? Back-to-back delay of game penalties. Pushes the ball back to the 13-yard line. He says, no two-point conversion. We're going for the extra point. We're going for the tie. We're going into overtime. LSU crashes through the line, blocks the extra point. LSU goes on to win it 7-6. You never know. I'm just telling you, you never know. Hour number two, Hot Topics. Chris Vanini of The Athletic covers the group of five conferences. He'll share his thoughts on the big matchup in Athens, Ohio, between the Raging Cajuns and the Bobcats of Ohio. And then Frank Schwab stops by, as he does each and every Thursday, to give his picks for week number three. It's all coming your way today. Good afternoon, CD. How you feeling, buddy?
I'm feeling good, Jordy. I'm feeling good. We're getting that much closer to a fantastic weekend filled with some great college football games. Thankfully, the statewide games are going to be some early ones.
Finally, yes, that's right. 11 o'clock for LSU, 1 o'clock for the Raging Cajuns, and then we got a slew full of good games that we can all sit back, relax, and hopefully enjoy along the way. Meanwhile, we mentioned the 11 o'clock game, the Raging Cajuns taking on the Bobcats of Ohio. Frank Solich, well-respected, did a great job when he was at Nebraska. Why they let him go was still unbeknownst to all of us, but it's to Ohio's gain. Frank Solich addressed the media, and he gave his thoughts on Coach Napier's Raging Cajuns.
Their quarterback is a big part of that. You know, he's a guy that's an excellent runner as well as thrower. He's got a strong arm. You know, he's not very tall, about 5'10", they say. But there's been some Heisman Trophy winners that probably aren't any taller and are playing pro ball right now. He's got the ability to make the big play both in the air and on the ground. And they've got really good running backs, and they can keep subbing them in. They got an experienced offensive line, and they got a big offensive line. I mean, those guys up front are huge, and, you know, they'll try to wear you down.
All right. He mentioned running backs and how you can sub them back in and out. But Frank Solich doesn't consider the Cajuns to be one-dimensional.
I don't see them as being one-dimensional, but obviously if we can't stop the run, that'll be a tough deal for us. But I think the same is true for them. You know, if our running game gets going the way it's capable of getting going, and we've shown flashes of that at times this season, I think you'll find that it'll be two teams that have the ability to run. They're going to be playing hard to keep the other team from taking control of the game that way. But we'll see.
Solich commended Levi Lewis, the quarterback for the Raging Cajuns. He's got a pretty good one himself in Nathan Rourke. And here is Solich talking about Rourke, who broke the program touchdown record against Marshall.
I've not congratulated him on that yet. You know, we give him Sunday completely off, so we don't see him on Sunday. And so today when he comes in, certainly we'll congratulate him. He had a great ball game, and he's got more football to play yet. And so, accomplishing that record as he did at this point in time in his last season is remarkable.
Yes, it is. And finally, losing to Pitt, losing to Marshall, Frank Solich still found a lot of positives out of their first three games.
You know, you look at the positives, and there are a lot of positives from these games, first three games. You look at some of the things that we need to do better, and you address that with them, and you know they're anxious to get those things corrected and move on. So the spirit of this football team will not be broken. I do know that. And so it's going to be a lot of fun to coach this team, and it already has been, but it'll continue to be, and they'll give you everything they got, and they got quite a bit. So we'll just see how it plays out.
So a big matchup, 1 o'clock in Athens, Ohio. The Raging Cajuns in their vermilion and white taking on the Bobcats in their green and white. Big matchup for both of them. It's a very important, significant game for both schools. It could be one of those games that sends your season in the right direction. So the first road, true road game for the Raging Cajuns, and they'd love nothing better than to steal a win on the road and come back 3-1. Could be a special season for the Raging Cajuns, and this could be the game that launches them in that direction. If not, they come back 2-2 with still all the conference games in the world yet ahead of them. So either way, they're going to be fine. But, boy, this would be a feather in their cap against a team that really plays well at home. So you heard from Frank Solich. When we come back after this timeout, we're going to hear from our good friend Brody Miller on all things LSU as the Tigers get ready to open up on the road in the league against the Vanderbilt Commodores, a game you can listen to right here on 103.7 The Game. Pregame show, 9 a.m. Kickoff set for 11 a.m. right here on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We'll be right back.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, time to talk a little LSU football. Of course, they get ready to take on Vanderbilt in Nashville this Saturday, 11 a.m. kickoff in the smallest stadium in the Southeastern Conference. LSU fans will be running amok in Nashville. Also, so will our good friend, the LSU beat reporter for The Athletic, Mr. Brody Miller, who's kind enough to join us this afternoon. Brody, good day, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing, Jordy?
I'm doing terrific, man. I appreciate you coming on board. So everybody's asking me, so I'm going to defer to you. Everybody's concerned about LSU's defense. They've got injuries on the defensive line. They got injuries in the secondary. So where does LSU move forward with all these injuries as they get ready to take on Vandy?
Yeah, you know, it's a tricky thing, right? Because I think the concern is warranted. I just think people should probably, you know, easier said than done, probably pump the brakes a little bit. You know, I think with most of the injuries going on, I don't think any of them are things that are really going to hurt you when the hardest the SEC schedule gets going. I think Rashard Lawrence, you know, could, you know, if they wanted him to, I think he could play by Utah State. I don't know if they're going to push that. You know, Glenn Logan, I think that's more of a, they're hoping to have him back by Florida in about 3 weeks. You know, and Todd Harris, obviously, that's a tough loss in that secondary. But, you know, even, and Caleb on Chase on, I mean, he could probably play as soon as they wanted him to. I don't know when he will play, but I don't think that's anything very concerning either. So, you know, the injuries are things that, yes, I mean, they're not going to have them against Vanderbilt. That's not ideal. But LSU, I would imagine, is pretty confident it can have its way with Vanderbilt. It's 20, like, you know, though the spread has ranged from 21 to 24 points. And this is a Vanderbilt, you know, offense that, you know, is pretty flawed. It's an entire Vanderbilt team that's pretty flawed, if we're being honest. And I just don't know if, you know, you should really worry in the short term. And yes, there are things to be concerned about in the grand scheme of things. I think, you know, I think the main thing I would point to, even most people like going to the pass rush, and I think that's worth looking at. But I think we have to wait on that until you actually see a greater sample size with the starters actually in. You know, we've basically only seen one real game with the actual key starters in the pass rush. So I just don't know if you can judge that yet. My concern that jumps to mind is there seems to be some kind of weakness with that pass coverage in the middle of the field. You know, you can trust LSU on the sidelines with Christian Fulton, Derek Stingley, but there's something not right there. Maybe it's the scheme and some of the zone stuff they've been doing. Maybe it's the personnel with, you know, Jacoby Stevens and Kerry Vincent. But both Texas and a very bad Northwestern State team have been able to beat LSU very consistently with that short passing game in the middle of the field. So that's maybe the only thing I'd want to keep an eye on.
And I look at some teams like they have to play down the road, particularly that team in Crimson with the plethora of receivers they have, and it scares me to death. But the other thing, man, What's up with Grant Delpit? He just hasn't been the same player, has he?
He hasn't, and you're not wrong. You're not wrong at all. I mean, I think, you know, I give him the benefit of the doubt in the Texas game because he looked good in the first half, and the second half he looked exhausted. I mean, I can't remember a time I've ever seen Grant Delpit just, like, completely miss two one-on-one tackles. Not as if, like, he just didn't quite get him. No, he was flat-out beaten one-on-one situation. You don't see that often. Then he had a few errors on Saturday against Northwestern State. So it is definitely something to keep an eye on. I don't want to speculate, so I'm not going to do that. But you almost wonder, you know, is right. He 100%? I don't know. I there's something that hasn't looked perfect there. But I go back to – I always, you know, I think one of the common themes I'm always on the show is there an explanation? You know, the Texas game, there was an explanation. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be concerned, but it was at least explainable that he seemed exhausted, as most of the defense was. Not much of an explanation for that happening at Northwestern State.
No, it seems like the scheme, he's not, I don't know, he doesn't seem as reckless and as carefree as he used to. So I don't know. I'm not here to speculate either.
I agree.
It just something seems amiss.
I definitely agree. And, yeah, you wonder how much that is, you know, because it's worth noting. I think we sometimes kind of forget that Grant Delpit had to basically switch roles halfway through last season. He was that attacking quarter position, like you said, just freestyling superstar that first six or seven games last season when he was playing more down the line of scrimmage, more nickel. That's where he thrived. And then, you know, then once John Battle went out, they basically had no choice but to make him more of the back deep end free safety more often. And that's where Jacoby Stevens really started to click as the quarter. And that's where he found his role. And Jacoby Stevens is very good at that role. Yeah. So I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But now that you lose Todd Harris, now you have even less safeties you trust back in coverage. I don't know how much you can really let Grant Delpit be that freestyling guy. I'm really curious to see what they do these next few weeks with safety.
Yeah, no question. You're not going to find out about it against Vandy. Utah State has a pretty good quarterback, but nothing else. But then you get to Florida, so we'll see. But we're talking with Brody Miller. You had a great hour. I just want to compliment you on the hard work that you did about how Joe Burrow has taken this gargantuan leap as a passer. And I was curious, you said it started with some taunts from Urban Meyer. Can you, without giving the whole vault opening to us, can you kind of give us a little Cliff Notes version of what Urban Meyer did to Joe Burrow?
And it's something that I don't even think he means this. Like, he wasn't saying this in a, like, poor me way. I mean, he was saying this is a tool that Urban Meyer likes to use to see what quarterbacks can handle things. It isn't like him singling him out. He likes to kind of ruffle feathers. And this is something I heard even back when Joe Burrow first got here from a few of his teammates, that Urban Meyer really liked to kind of – the thing he liked to fluster Joe Burrow, and what he'd yell at him a lot was about his arm strength. He'd say, you know, you throw the ball like a girl. You're a Division III quarterback. And a lot of that was more about getting on him and seeing how he handles it. But, Joe Burrow flat out admitted to me one-on-one that my arm strength was not up to par. So I think it was a genuine thing with him. And then the greater problem was then that started to get into his head, and he started trying so hard to throw harder and harder, and that created this big, you know, windy baseball pitcher motion. And all of a sudden, you know, it's like the mocking actually created the problem. And I think that's when he joined JT Barrett to go out to Huntington Beach, California, and worked with 3D QB, which I'm sure most people have heard about, at least in some capacity. I mean, with Tom House and Adam Dedeaux. I mean, that's where Tom Brady, Drew Brees, so many of the best quarterbacks that basically learned how to reevaluate their throwing from this guy. And it was fascinating talking to him because some of the high-tech stuff they do, and it's not just metaphysical stuff, it's mental stuff, tracking brain waves, figuring out, you know, what kind of personality type you have and how you should be taught because of that. He was only there for 4 days, so I'm not going to claim that, you know, he's some major project of this. But you asked Joe Burrow about it, and he flat out said it completely changed the way he threw the football, putting more focus on his legs and whatnot, and putting much less stress on his arm. And he gives that a lot of credit. And it's worth pointing out, I'm not saying that is why he's having the breakout he's having this year, because that was 3 years ago. But that was, I think, the first step in him really making a three-year-long evolution as a passer to really make the leap he has this year.
So we need to send a bouquet of flowers or candy to Urban Meyer, right? Because it was his chiding that developed Joe Burrow mentally and to be mentally tough. And then he picked the other quarterback as the starter, so Burrow transferred. So we got to go thank Urban Meyer. I mean, we can't we can't keep chastising him. We appreciate him.
Exactly, yeah. It really is hilarious, just all the teams and coaches in the country that have had, like, a weird role in this whole dynamic of Joe Burrow being an LSU Tiger and being a Heisman candidate. Because, you know, there's the Tom Herman's the one who convinced Urban to take him. And then Urban's, yeah, like you said, Urban's the one who got on him and maybe helped fix, you know, inadvertently helped fix his throwing motion. And then, you know, you got Ryan Day there. Now he's the head coach at Ohio State. There's just all these different pieces that helped get him where he is. It's really one of the more fascinating careers I've seen.
Yeah, a little 6 degrees of separation. I know where Brody Miller is going to be on November the 22nd. He may not know it yet, but he's going to be at Fred's, one of the hot spots in Tigerland, because my main man, Shaquille O'Neal, is going to be DJing at Fred's in Tigerland. So you got to go there and do the story.
I know, right? It's hilarious you said that. The second I saw that, I sent a message to our college basketball editor, and I'm like, I need to go follow him and go be there, right? I don't know if he'll let me, but I need to be there. I would kill to be able to see that. I had a rule when I took this job. When I took this job, I said, I'm never going to Tigerland. I'm too old for that. I'm not going to do it. But that might be me breaking the rule.
Yeah, you can break the rule. He goes by the name of DJ Diesel. So Shaq going to be doing the record scratching or whatever. On that Friday, November 22nd, in Fred's of Tigerland. It's a fun, fun place. All right. LSU got a wake-up call against Northwestern State, right? So they're going to go on the road. It's an early game. How do you see this thing ending up?
I assume it's an early bloodbath with an LSU kind of, you know, let some young guys play. I mean, it's really crazy to say that about an SEC game, and maybe I'm getting – you know, ahead of myself, but I don't think LSU is going to sleepwalk or anything like that, especially after last week. But I think LSU one has a lot.
Yeah.
I think they have a lot to prove on defense. You're going to see them go out there, and this is a very bad Vanderbilt defense. I mean, for context, they played two good offenses. So I'll give them a little bit of benefit of the doubt. But week one, they played Georgia. Yeah. Georgia barely threw the ball, and they ran for like 350 yards on the grass. And then they play Purdue. Purdue didn't run the ball much, but they threw for, I want to say, 500 yards on Vanderbilt.
500 yards, yes.
So they can be beat both ways very clearly. So I think I have a good feeling LSU is, you know, going into halftime with this one with a pretty substantial lead.
Have fun in Nashville. Brody Miller of The Athletic, great job as always. Thank you for your time. We'll talk to you next week, buddy. Thanks.
Thanks for having me. Talk next week. Bye.
All right, you're the best. We'll hear from Ed Orgeron. We'll hear from Derek Mason. More on LSU. And I'll tell you what Ed O is going to say to the team before the game. Guaranteed. Next, the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
I'm in money. Walmart has...
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Well, we got a big opportunity for all of you in our listening area coming up October the 1st. That's when the Opelousas Rotary Club auction returns. October 1st, 6 to 10 p.m. live on KDCG. Hundreds of items will be available to bid on, everything from furniture, sports memorabilia, household items, hair care, vacation packages, gift certificates, home decor, and much, much more. So make sure, put it on your calendar. Call in on October the 1st to get a head start and save on those Christmas presents. Most gift certificates are going to sell for 50 to 80% off. How about that? Can you believe it? All of the proceeds go to charitable causes. It's the Opelousas Rotary Club Auction. It returns October the 1st, and it's only live on KDCG. All right. LSU favored by 19.5 over the Vanderbilt Commodores. You just heard it. Purdue threw for like 500 yards. So if LSU comes in, takes care of their business, they'll be just fine. But we've got some sound. Ed Orgeron had his radio show last night that we listened to right here on 103.7 The Game, plus some other from earlier in the week. Wanted to play that and kind of get you a feel for what's going on as the Tigers will leave tomorrow for Nashville. Don't forget, they have the TAF Coaches Caravan in Nashville this Friday with Will Wade and Paul Maneri and Didi Bro and Beth Tarina and Nikki Fargus all in attendance. We're 50 days away from the start of LSU basketball season. Practice will be starting up shortly. But here's Coach O, and he was talking and giving some kudos about Vandy's defense, who, by the way, is coming off of a bye week.
Yeah, well, obviously it's an advantage for them. I would imagine that their coach went back and tried to fix them first. I think that's the big key in a bye, fix the things that they're not doing well. And obviously we would do the same thing here. And then probably put in some new things, some new wrinkles, maybe look at the film and see the things that have given us problems. And if they're going to see if we fix it. I think we can see some of the same things that we haven't done well against and maybe a couple of different wrinkles, but I have confidence in our football staff that they can make the adjustments right away.
This game is very similar to the Texas game. What? What are you talking about, Jordy? Okay, wait. Coach Orgeron, one of the main things he talked about in the importance and the significance of the game against Texas and Austin was because of recruiting. And with Jacob Phillips and Jacoby Stevens and some others, Nashville, according to Coach O, obviously is a very fertile recruiting ground for LSU.
You know, there's a lot of LSU people in Nashville. And obviously, Nashville is a very transient town. It's a beautiful place. Obviously, we all know that. But guys in Nashville do go. They do all around the SEC. So it's not far to get. It's easy to get to from Nashville to New Orleans on a flight. And I think there's big interest in LSU for some reason in that town.
Look, Nashville. LSU is to Nashville like Alabama has been to North Louisiana when it comes to recruiting. We get their best. Sometimes Alabama's gotten our best. Ed O's doing his best job to stop that once and for all. Okay, one of the big questions asked on his radio show last night on 103.7 The Game, who's going to fill the void that Todd Harris' season-ending injury leaves?
Yeah, you'll see Kerry Benson back there, who he's played free safety before. You'll see Kenan Jones, who is the backup free safety, so those guys are going to play. But obviously, we always got Grant, and we got Jacoby Stevens. Those two guys are starters, so we can mix and match those guys back there. We should be fine. But I tell you, we're going to miss Todd. He's a great character, young man. He did everything right. He's a leader in this room, outstanding player for him.
What always helps the secondary is a pass rush. You got to put pressure on the quarterback, any quarter. I don't care how good, bad, great, indifferent they are. If they're a college quarterback and they've got time in the pocket to throw, they're going to complete some passes. Even the worst of the worst, they're going to complete some passes. Coach O vowed that all of us will see a better pass rush from the Tigers.
There's been a lot of discussion about that this week, and I'm sure you're going to see them rushing the passer more than you see them dropping. I promise you that.
All right. I like that. I don't know if Caleb Chaisson's going to play. We know that Rashard Lawrence is not, and Logan is not. So a lot of injuries on the LSU front for this game. So stay tuned for that one. The other big question it's a wealth of talent, and the biggest challenge for a coaching staff is to utilize that talent and to get them in the game. And that, of course, centers around the running back position. And Coach O summed up about his two freshmen and what he hopes to accomplish in ball games now.
We need to get these guys in the first and second quarter and significant playing time. They have earned that right. Obviously, we have a full house back there, but it's a good deal. We have five guys that we think that we can play. But we need to get those guys in early and get them used to the competition, especially in SEC play, and see what they can do. I think they're going to be fine.
That's O talking about John Emery and Davis Price, the two prized rookie players who we really haven't had a chance to see that much. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has been the bell cow to date, but it's they throw the ball so much. I'm not complaining. I love it. But you're going to have to be able to run in close quarters on the road against the really, really good teams. So look for that. Derek Mason is the coach of the Vanderbilt Commodores. Good guy. Nice to talk to. Just got to get better players, and it's so hard at Vanderbilt. But Derek Mason talked about LSU's new look offense.
You know what? I mean, it maximizes, you know, their talents and abilities. You know, when you see, you know, what a quarterback who's experienced, who really understands the game and has talent, you know, can do with time and you know, terrific skill guys around them. I think it's what, you know, Tiger Nation has probably been looking for a long time. I mean, you look at it, and you know, I mean, they're dynamic, and they spread you out. They can still run the football, but it's more nuanced.
It's more nuanced, and it's the spreading the ball out and going vertical and horizontal in passing routes has been the biggest difference. Getting the ball out of Joe Burrow's hands quickly. His ability to recognize early in his progression who he's going to be throwing it to because of the way the defense is set up, it all works. And so far, it's been a Ferrari, just fine tuned and winning the Grand Prix. So far, we'll see. We talked about recruiting, a fertile recruiting ground the state of Tennessee is in the city of Nashville. LSU's got some really good players on their squad from that state. Derek Mason talked about Ed O and LSU going into old Rocky Top State and Vanderbilt and getting Tennessee players.
I think at the end of the day, I mean, that's about – you know, what they want and what they're looking for. You know, I mean, a lot of good players go a lot of places. In terms of keeping players in state, you know, Juwan Williams came here. He had a chance to go to LSU or Alabama, and now he's with the New England Patriots. I think it's the right kid that comes to Vanderbilt and, you know, maybe other kids that are looking for other things, you know, maybe go other places. So I think, you know, man, what you see is the mid-state football area in Tennessee, it has great talent. It's produced a lot of great talent. And so people come in and recruit it.
They come in and recruit it. Coach Orgeron has talked about the key element that he is concerned about is Keyshawn Vaughn, an NFL-type running back. He's really impressed with him. So is Keyshawn's coach, Derek Mason.
He's finally hit his stride. I mean, he's mature. He understands, you know, where we're at. And we've had to deal with some patchwork up front. And, you know, I mean, he hasn't been swayed by that process. I think, like, for him, he knows, man, this football team's a good football team that we have. Man, we're playing good football teams. He brings a different mentality to the table. I mean, he's tough. He's nasty. He's an alpha dog. And you know, I mean, he's helping young men on our team, you know, like, realize that, you know, man, they could be those things too.
All right. The last question that was asked from Derek Mason, whose team has had an off week. So what have they cleaned up the most with all this extra time to prepare for LSU?
We took it the right way. I mean, I'm very upfront with the facts. And, you know, when the tape don't lie, your tape is your resume. As we went back through it, you know, they had 23 penalties, you know, in the first two ball games, 13, you know, in game two. That's not who we are. You know, but the bottom line is the margin for error here is small. You know, man, we have to continue to shrink it, you know, man, as best we can. And that goes back to the intelligence piece of how we need to play when you talk about relentless, tough, and intelligent. We haven't been that. So these guys own that. They understand, man, that the ball's got to be better. They understand that, you know, man, the penalties have cost us opportunities to get off the field and points. And that's all about, you know, like beating yourself.
There you have it, Derek Mason. 11 o'clock kickoff from Nashville. Pregame show here on 103.7 The Game at 9. Kickoff at 11. And then the Tigers will come back home. It'll be an early arrival into Baton Rouge, and everyone will be thrilled with that. Not the case with the New Orleans Saints. They're going to be way out on the West Coast. They're going to be the 3:30 game as they take on the Seattle Seahawks. We'll hear from Sean Payton and Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom Hill next here on the Jordy Helpert Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you're locked into the Jordy Helpert Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Welcome back, kiddos. Great to be with you. We've got another phenomenal giveaway opportunity for you and yours. Prejean's $50 gift certificate giveaway. And who doesn't love Prejean's? I mean, seriously. Enter to win a $50 gift certificate to Prejean's in the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse. Just go to 103.7thegame.com. and follow the steps. It's very simple. It won't take you any time. It's painless. And $50 at Prejean, nothing to sneeze about. So get involved. Get in the game. 1037thegame.com. Who's going to get in the game first is the question that Sean Payton's not answering. As the Saints get ready to take on the Seahawks, he's playing games with the Seahawks and Pete Carroll, because he's not naming a starter. Listen, as he talks about how Sunday's going to go in the great Northwest.
We'll approach this game with two quarterbacks, and we'll see where we're at with it. So, but we'll have the right plan relative to what those guys are going to be doing.
Everybody thinks it's going to be Teddy Bridgewater, but you never know. Sneaky Taysom Hill. I don't know. But obviously Bridgewater is excited about this opportunity presented to him.
We're still installing game plan and putting things together. But I can't say that. Getting out that last week, you know, just prepared me. Got my feet wet again, and I'm excited going into this game.
It's been a long time since he's had a meaningful game.
I mentioned to someone that I hadn't played any meaningful football since 2015. You know, I was able to play in the game last year against the Carolina Panthers, but we had already sealed our place in the playoffs, and I was able to play in the preseason the past 2 years, but it's nothing like being out there during the games when it counts the most. Not saying that the preseason doesn't count, and you never take the game for granted, but just to be able to go out there and compete at the high level just brought back memories.
Preseason doesn't count, Teddy. You're right. There's no question about that. This is the one that caught my attention. Listen to what Teddy has to say about to the fans about himself.
I don't think so. But, you know, we play this game for different reasons. And ultimately, you know, I play this game, you know, for the guys in that locker room, you know, for my family, and the fans, of course. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's about those guys in that locker room and how we all feel about each other.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Thank you. Appreciate it.
He came out earlier and said the fans haven't seen the real Teddy Bridgewater from his days back at Louisville. So we'll see if he can. You know, he had that one great season in Minneapolis for the Vikings, and then that horrific, horrific, horrific injury. We will see if he can come through. And look, Saints still have high goals and high aspirations. And yeah, without Drew Brees, certainly. But there's enough good players on this team that have to step up and help whoever is at quarterback, whether it's Teddy Bridgewater or if it's Taysom Hill. And Taysom Hill's a little excited as well about his opportunity coming up this Sunday.
I'd be really excited. Look, I think this is, what every kid dreams of, right, is having an opportunity to play in the NFL. And so I would certainly be ready and excited, but we'll see what happens.
Again, I don't know what the plan's going to be. That's that is up to Sean Payton to figure out, and he will, and he'll have a plan for him. I don't know if there's any question or any doubt, and Taysom Hill certainly brings an awful lot to the table that I like. And I really believe that it's more so than ever, it's about doing whatever it takes to stay in the ball game and have a chance to win the ball game late. So you can't be afraid to interchange quarterbacks, and I'm sure that he will talk about that to both of them, right? I don't think there's any question about that. But here is Taysom Hill talking about can you possibly have your backup quarterback still playing on special teams?
My expectation is to still be very much involved from a special team standpoint and, you know, offensively. And, you know, and obviously today we had a first practice, first install of kind of what we're going to do, and we'll kind of see how things develop as the week goes on.
Wow. I mean, I know he's a special talent. He's a Swiss Army knife, all the adjectives and cliches that go along with it. But, man, you know, JT Barrett's on the practice squad. I can't imagine Taysom Hill being on special team. I would be literally shocked if that happens. But we will see. One thing about Taysom Hill, and the thing that I love about him more than anything, he's a competitor. And he just loves being out there playing ball.
Like any opportunity that I've had to get on the field, I've been very excited about. And I love being out on the field. I love competing. I love playing with my teammates. And so, you know, my mindset is no different than it was last week or the week before, that I'm going to prepare the best I can to take advantage of every opportunity and try to make the most of each of those opportunities.
One more, Clint, from Taysom Hill. I'm kind of curious. You know, Drew Brees is the focal point. He is the rallying cry. He's the guy that gets. He's not afraid to get on somebody when they don't meet his expectations of how they should compete. Everyone centers around him. You see the pregame chants and all that. So Taysom Hill was asked what it's like not having Brees out there at practice.
Drew's been the heart and soul of this team for a long time. So it was hard, you know, when he went down. And I've been with him for the last few years. I know how hard he works. I know how he prepares each week. And to see a guy put so much into the game go down is a tough thing to swallow. So I think, you know, personally, my mindset I don't want to speak for everybody on the team, but I think the mindset is that, man, we're going to do everything we can to win football games for that guy because he did so much for us.
That's what I love to hear. And look, it's not the greatest of divisions, although it's an early, early sample size. What were the Saints after two games a year ago? They weren't very good either. We were all going, what's... And then all of a sudden they got on a roll. So it's too early to count out the Falcons. Is it too early to count out Carolina? I mean, is Cam Newton even going to play this weekend? You know, I don't know. Tampa Bay? It might be Jameis Winston's last opportunity. He was a great college player, and we've seen some flashes every now and then of Jameis Winston, but inevitably the bad outweighs the good. So the Saints don't have to be great without Drew Brees. They've got to figure out a way to steal a win here, steal a win there, kind of tread water, as I like to say. Keep above water. If you come back with a winning record, oh, look out. And the good thing might be this. Remember Drew Brees looked like his arm was tired at the end of the year? Well, he kind of gets some time off and maybe comes back a whirlwind. Just remember, there's always a silver lining to every dark cloud. Hour number one's history. Hour number two, straight ahead. The Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7TheGame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go. Sean Payton earlier this week agreed to a five-year deal to stay in New Orleans. See if he can earn that this weekend as the Saints take on the Seattle Seahawks to cap off a weekend that sees LSU in Nashville, the Raging Cajuns in Ohio, in Athens, Ohio. Road games abound this weekend. So, without further ado, we do it every day at this time of day. CD, do your thing as we take our walk around the sports water cooler.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, CD, what you got for me today, my friend?
Jordy, we got a lot to kind of get to, but I want to start things off. I saw this just pop up about head coach Mike Zimmer of the Minnesota Vikings saying he wants to coach well into the 2020s. He has no doubts he can go to 70. Do you see the Vikings head coach lasting that long in the league?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if Kirk Cousins plays well and keeps throwing it, it's certainly possible. He's a good defensive mind. They got good clubs. They're good again this year. So much depends on good fortune, lack of injuries, all those kind of things. So, Kenny, yeah. Willie, well, that's up to him and the Vikings. We'll see.
It's going to be fun to see what happens there. But, of course, now I got to kind of flip things over. I want to jump over to Major League Baseball for just a quick moment, Jordy. The Houston Astros got their 100th win. But more importantly, Gerrit Cole made some history getting his 300th strikeout on the season last night in a pretty decent gym. His another 10-strikeout performance for Cole. For historical reference, it's been since 1999 when Pedro Martinez hit 300 strikeouts. It feels like we're just seeing two Cy Young candidates on the same team. It's unreal what we're seeing right now with this pitching staff.
You give up home runs or you strike them out. I remember him in college. He's a big, physical specimen on that mound, and he has just found his rhythm at the right time. He has been terrific. Verlander, I mean, that Astros have the team to beat in baseball. Now, can they get it done? Certainly. Will they have challenges? Certainly. They have challenges getting out of the American League to get to the World Series. And when they get to the World, if they get to the World Series, they may have to play the Dodgers, who've been good all year long. Don't count out my Cardinals. We will see. But he is an imposing figure, and the Astros, again, great job of utilizing their farm system, drafting, free agency. They just, what a great staff. They put it all together, and they are reaping the benefits of their brilliance in the front office.
It's going to be fun to see how this team does in the postseason. Of course, we'll have it right here on 103.7 The Game, and if necessary, we'll bump it over to the Rewind 97.7 FM, 1330 AM, and 104.1 FM in Lake Charles. But let's flip on over to the NFL. Ron Rivera been cutting a lot of press conferences short lately after getting numerous questions about one man and one man only, and that is Cam Newton and his possibility of maybe being out for this Week 3 matchup. Jordy, it feels like right now it's trouble in paradise for Carolina, and maybe just maybe Ron Rivera's on the hot seat now.
Well, Rivera needs to take a lesson from a Belichick or a Peyton, address it, and say, okay, guys, look, here's the deal, and I'm done with talking about it. So let's move on to the next question. Get it over with early, But you can't walk out. I mean, just stand up there and say, look, I already told you the answer to that. Saban's the same way. I already told you the answer to that. Let's move on. Any questions about something else, I'll be more than happy to answer. So he's feeling the heat. There's no question about it. Riverboat Ron is not the same. How many? You asked about Zimmer. Could he coach that long? How many people thought Ron Rivera would still be the head coach of Carolina this long? It depends on ownership, and it depends on luck and good fortune and injuries. And right now, his most important player is injured. You know what I would do if I'm Carolina? I'd put Christian McCaffrey in the shotgun and run Wildcat the whole time.
I mean,
that's what I'd do. Heck with it.
Put it in the hands of your best possible player. I feel like that would be an interesting strategy, to say the least, to see what's going to happen there. I mean, I don't know who else is on that depth chart. Thankfully, it's not like what we're seeing with the New York Jets, where they're down to their third-string quarterback in Luke Falk. And that's going to be interesting to see what happens with them down the line. But, of course, everybody's talking about what's going to be going on later on tonight with Thursday Night Football. Yeah, Nashville, your Tennessee Titans taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Gardner Minshew, the stash. Can they wind up trying to snap that two-game skid, or is this going to continue to be an absolute dumpster fire in Jacksonville?
I think they win it. I think they win this one tonight, but nobody's going to be watching that one. Everybody's going to be watching Houston at Tulane.
That's going to be fun.
What's kind of going on with the Green Wave? That's going to be a fun game, a very important game in the AAF. That's the game to watch. I think Jacksonville's defense wakes up a little bit, and I'm not worried about the Tennessee Titans. So I think Jacksonville gets the win. I think Tulane gets the win as well. Roll Green Wave, rolling down the field. So
I would definitely
don't
pick
like
them.
Tulane that. Yeah, I don't like Tulane that much, but I'll take them over Houston.
Tulane,
I really will.
Tulane Athletics is on the come up, Jordy. You brought up Willie Fritz. Now that he's cooking with his own ingredients, making his own gumbo, we're seeing some really good things happen with the former Georgia Southern head coach, and obviously Ron Hunter coming on down from the Peach State as well in the basketball program. It feels like they're going to be on the come up in terms of just Tulane Athletics as a whole.
Couldn't get much worse. No offense to the former coach of the Tulane basketball team, but he's an NBA guy, Dunleavy. He couldn't recruit you and me and illegally recruit us. He's that bad. So Ron Hunter's going to do a really good job there. We saw what he did in the Sun Belt, and you know, the Sun Belt comes to Tulane, right? Absolutely.
Exactly. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there when it comes to we've talked about Ron Hunter, but the Tulane-Houston matchup is going to be a lot of fun because I feel like Tulane, in terms of the AAC, is on the come up. But, of course, I think everybody talks about what we've seen from UCF. And apparently UCF drubbing opponents like they did this past weekend against, I believe it was Stanford, they absolutely demolished them and drew absolutely zero ratings in that 2 o'clock matchup last week. Wound up seeing some of those overnights. It winds up making put a little black mark on the former, as they put it themselves, the self-proclaimed national champions.
Yeah, boring game. They spanked with a rookie quarterback, a freshman quarterback. So, who cares? Who cares? But as we talked with, we're going to talk to Chris Vanini here shortly, and I'm going to ask him about the group of five. Is there a powerhouse this year that could crash the party? I doubt it, but we'll see what Chris has to say. But, ratings, no, nobody wants to watch that. Stanford's boring. Good coach, Coach Shaw, but boring. Boring. Kind of like LSU under Les Miles. Boring. Not now. Not with Ed O and Joe and Steve and Joe Burrow. Not now. Fun to watch.
It's been fun to watch that program just get things done and, you know, kind of flipping things over. Saw this pop up, and I want to get your thoughts on it. The best player in NBA history, Jordy, to rock the number 33. I feel like Larry Bird is a strong nomination. Which way you lean on this one?
Ooh, who else wore 33? Give me some choices.
Obviously, you got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wore number 33. Boris Diaw wore number 33. Danny Granger, Grant Hill, Alonzo Mourning.
Boris Diaw. No. Did Kareem wear 33?
Let me double
check. If Kareem wore 33, I'm going with Kareem, the all-time leading scorer. I'm not sure he wore 33. I know Bird did. But anyway, look, They're all great players, no matter what
Kareem
numbers they
wore. Yeah, Kareem wore
33. But Kareem, I'm going with Kareem. All-time leading scorer in NBA history. Bird was great, but Kareem, I mean, come on, the Kareem of the crop. Anyway, there's your Hot Topics for the day. Brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. The Beard family doing it right for nearly 9 decades, nearly 90 years. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go. Everything tastes better with Cajun Chef hot sauce on it. Chris Fanini previews Ohio U and the Raging Cajuns next.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, this Saturday in Athens, Ohio, Sunbelt meets MAC. The UL Raging Cajuns heading up to Athens to take on Frank Solich and the Miami Bobcats, plus some other very impactful games in September of week four of the college football season that the 13-member college football playoff selection committee will be watching very, very intently. So I thought, let's call up our guy that does great work covering college football for The Athletic, Chris Fanini. He came on our show earlier in the season. We're thrilled to have him on again. Chris, good afternoon. How are you?
I am doing well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you so much. When I mentioned Miami, Ohio University and the Raging Cajuns, I think it's a very important game for both of these clubs. What do you see as intriguing about this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, it's two teams that should be in the mix to win their conferences, which is I always like these group of five matchups where it's not necessarily a group of five playing an FCS or an Alabama type team, but when the best of the group of five is playing the best of the group of five. Ohio's already played. Ohio played Marshall. Marshall played Boise State. Now Ohio's playing Louisiana. So I like these kind of matchups where you can really see how the best from Group of Five leagues match up with each other. And I think it's an intriguing matchup for that, if anything.
Frank Solich has built a program there. He's got himself quite a quarterback who has had a long journey to get where he's gotten to, from Canada to the state of Alabama to junior college in Kansas and then to Ohio U. And once he got there, he has set record after record after record. No one's had more touchdowns at Ohio University than he has. When you see their quarterback, what comes to mind?
Yeah, he's a real tough kid. Like you said, he's from Canada, but he went down to Alabama to play some high school ball when junior college ends up at Ohio. And he's a guy who he does it all in the passing game and the running game. He's often one of their top rushers. I think he's second on. He leads the team in rushing yards actually this year with 150, five touchdowns, no interceptions. Coming into this year, he was the best quarterback in the MAC. But the questions were, could he find enough skill guys around him, because Ohio lost a lot of its running backs and wide receivers from a year ago. And they're still kind of working that out. I imagine you wouldn't want work taking so many hits. He's second on the team in carries. But it's kind of what they have to deal with, and that's what they're going to ride.
Do the Raging Cajuns have the formula that you need to win on the road? I mean, they run the football. Take away who they've been playing against. Anytime you can run for over 400 yards in a game, that tells me something. And their defense seems to have gotten a little bit more stingy. That seems to be the formula of what it takes to win in college football on the road.
Rush defense has not been very good this year. The defense has usually been kind of the strength of Ohio's program, but they had some changes in the offseason. The former defensive coordinator, Jimmy Burrow, who is the father of Joe Burrow, he retired at the end of last season to go watch Joe play. So there have been some changes on the defense at Ohio. And, yeah, Louisiana's averaging something like more than 8 yards a carry, I think, on offense. And yeah, the Texas Southern game pushes that up against. But, yeah, you're going to have to run the ball, control the clock, because Ohio's a team that's not going to run up, race up and down the field. So if you're trying to keep possessions at a minimum, got to take advantage of it and run the ball the way to do that.
Who do you like and why?
This is tough. I mean, I think Ohio's like a three-point favorite, which is essentially, you know, home field. Ohio's been a tough team to figure out. They score 31 points against Marshall last week, but they only had 10 against Pitt. They've been in a lot of close games. Still trying to work their way out. I'm going to go with Ohio just by a smudge, just because of home field. But, you know, and another thing I'm going to be watching in this game is turnovers. It's been a problem for Louisiana this year. I think Levi has 3 interceptions. So Ohio's defense, if they can force a couple of turnovers, I think they get this game at home.
Chris Vanini, The Athletic, kind enough to join us. Who's the best non-Power 5 conference team out there? And how many good ones are there, really good ones?
You know, I think there's more really good ones than there have been in recent years. I think UCF is number one for obvious reasons. I have them as a top 10 team. They look like they may have a new star quarterback in Dylan Gabriel, the true freshman. They destroyed Stanford last year in a game, last week in a game that was not all that close. Boise State is really good again. Temple and Cincinnati in the American look pretty good. Memphis in the American looks pretty good. Appalachian State has had a bit of a rocky start to the year, but I still think they can get things together and have a really good year. The Mountain West looks really deep. I'm going to be very curious if UCF and Boise can make it through their conference play undefeated, because both of those leagues look really deep right now, and they may knock each other off, which could put a lot more teams in the mix for that New Year's Six berth.
Chris Vanini, The Athletic, joining us. If you could only watch one of these three games, which one would you want to watch and why? Notre Dame at Georgia, Michigan at Wisconsin, Auburn at Texas A&M. Those are the three big marquee matchups in the Power 5 conferences. Which one would you want to watch and why?
For me, it's Notre Dame-Georgia, just because it's not a matchup we see all the time. It's really fun when you see power programs who don't play each other very often meet up, just like LSU-Texas a couple of weeks ago. Georgia went to Notre Dame a few years ago, and you know, that the Red kind of took over Notre Dame Stadium there. And it's really a matchup that kind of just gets your blood really flowing when you know you're not going to see this very often. Two teams that are contending for the playoff in a non-conference game. The atmosphere in Athens is going to be great. So that's the game I am most looking forward to.
Okay. I think Georgia rolls over them. I just do. What do you think?
Ian Book was better last week, but also this is a different Georgia team than went to Notre Dame here, so it's much better. Notre Dame has had some issues earlier. You know, the Louisville game was a bit rocky a bit. You know, Notre Dame in big games often doesn't win them. I mean, there's been a lot of close ones, but they've lost a lot of big games in recent years. I think home field for Georgia, with everything they've got rolling, I think they win. I mean, they're my pick to win. Whether or not Notre Dame makes it close, kind of leaning toward no. I think the home field maybe helps to get out of hand for Georgia.
I'm with you. I don't think it's close. I really, really don't. I think there'll be some channel switching, maybe Oklahoma State at Texas. People may draw their attention to that one. Big one for Jim Harbaugh, Michigan at Wisconsin. Wisconsin, year in, year out, sneaky good. They have a heck of a running back. All the pressure's on Jim Harbaugh. Does he get a road win for Michigan?
Ooh, this is tough. I mean, Michigan under Harbaugh on the road against good teams, he just hasn't gotten it done. You know, he's had some close games. Ohio State, they were an inch away on fourth down, but they still haven't gotten over the hump of winning big games on the road. Wisconsin, I'm not 100% sure what to make of them yet. They've played two games. They've dominated really poor competition in Central Michigan and South Florida. They haven't allowed a point this year. So I think that defense is legit. We'll have to see what that offense does when it goes up against a much more talented defense in Michigan. I'm going to pick Wisconsin, I think, again, at home, and I think they have enough in the running game. But I think it's going to be a low score in the first.
I'm with you. I'm going with Michigan on this one. I think Harbaugh finally pulls one out of his hat. And then in the SEC, a freshman quarterback for Auburn, Nix, goes on the road for the 8th-ranked Auburn Tigers. They go into College Station with the 12th man and over 100,000 people, Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M. It's a divisional game. It's a very significant game for that. What do you think, Auburn at A&M?
Yeah, Auburn opens up with that big win against Oregon, the comeback win, but they've hit a couple of bumps since then. Some people are talking about possible quarterback changes. The running game is here and there. A&M is a hard team to figure out. They go to Clemson and game that wasn't really all that close, and then they blow out two bottom feeders at home. I'm going to go Auburn. I think the defensive line and what Auburn can do in the trenches will get it done. But Texas A&M's schedule is incredibly difficult the rest of the year. I mean, after this, they've got Alabama in 2 weeks. They still got to go through the whole SEC West schedule. Plus, they got Georgia and South Carolina. So it could be a real long year for A&M.
One last one. We've got 3 weeks in the books. Is Joe Burrow one of your Heisman Trophy candidates at this point in time?
Yeah, we did a staff straw poll at The Athletic. I had him at number two behind Jalen Hurts. So he has looked really, really good so far. And right now I've got him at number two.
Sounds good. We'll welcome you back on that note. But Chris Vanini, all kidding aside, thank you. We enjoyed it very much. Enjoy college. Oh, we got a good one tonight, right? Houston at Tulane. Who do you like in that one real quick before we let you go?
I picked Tulane. This is a huge game in the division. Yes. It's a huge divisional game for those teams. Tulane is really, really good defensive line. I think they'll be putting a lot of pressure on Houston's quarterback, and I think Tulane gets it done at home.
I think Tulane has the better coach, too. I think he's really, really good. Chris, thank you so much. Enjoy college football week number 4. We'll talk again soon. That is Chris Vanini of The Athletic, kind enough to join us. That brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana. It's the envy of every truck driver to own a Peterbilt. The best in the business for years and years. Safest, most dependable, most reliable, best resale value, the most comfortable. When the Tigers travel to Nashville, heck, they're traveling today with all their equipment. They're using a Peterbilt truck to get them from Baton Rouge to Nashville. We'll be back with more here on the Jordy Helfberg Show.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Oh, week 3 of the NFL is upon us. Tennessee, Jacksonville tonight, and so many quarterback injuries. Man, if you like to make investments, this is a tough, tough week. But the Schwab is joining us, Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. Man, you guys must be very, very busy. You've got Roethlisberger out. Our Drew Brees is out minimum 6 games. Cam Newton might miss a game. Goodness gracious, you got Eli sitting out now, and now the Miami Dolphins had said, okay, if the Giants are going to pay Danny Jones and we're going to play Josh Rosen, how do you keep up with all this stuff, Frank? Good afternoon.
Yeah, it's been a crazy week as far as quarterbacks go. We're talking, I mean, this isn't just, look, the Dolphins are going to be terrible no matter who they play the quarterback, but we're talking the rest of the teams, it's like Hall of Famers, former MVPs, Super Bowl winners. I mean, this is, it really seems like this week, especially Monday when it was the three guys, Brees, Roethlisberger, and Manning, where it just felt like a seismic shift in the NFL. It really did. I don't want to overstate that, but with those three guys, Ben, Brees, and Eli, we're talking about three guys who are likely all three are going to the Hall of Fame someday, and none of them are going to play on Sunday first time. I think I saw a stat the first time since like 2004 that none of them are going to start. And it's just, it's all a little bit like a changing of the guard this week. And the Cam situation, too, it's, hey, here's the thing. You know, people complain about all these rules to protect quarterbacks, right? Like, oh, how can you call that roughing the quarterback?
Yes.
And the other? But no, but at the end of the day, I'm okay with that because I don't really want to see Luke Falk playing football. I don't really want to see Teddy Bridgewater over Tom Brady, to be honest. I don't really want to see Mason Rudolph this week. I want to see great quarterbacks. But hey, injuries happen. This is the game. It's a violent game, and seasons can change on a dime.
So you're telling Jamal Adams, who was fined $21,000, to be quiet, right?
I will say one thing, and I've complained about this on Twitter a lot. I think the NFL's fine system is a joke. I think it's legally robbing players of money. Like, we become so numb to the numbers that we don't stop and think, Jamal Adams just got $21,000 taken from him. Just for doing his job. And we all saw that play. We could all see it. And it wasn't, look, if there's something egregious that you need to get fined for, that's fine. But I think he got penalized on that play. And if he didn't, he should. That's fine. It was something within the game itself. Penalize a guy 15 yards. But then just because the NFL can, it hands out these five-figure fines on a weekly basis. We all sit here and talk about, players go broke after football. It's all their fault. Maybe it's because the NFL's taking small fortunes from them every week. I think it's a joke. I really do. I think it's robbery. I think it's terrible for the NFL to do this to its players. But anyway, that's a tangent. And, this whole deal with protecting quarterbacks ain't going anywhere because this is what happens when you have a league where multiple quarterbacks are injured. Although most of these injuries happen kind of with it, it's just kind of fluky. Drew Brees hits his hand on Aaron Donald's hand. What are you going to do about that?
Right. Right. Yeah. But I think it's directly tied to television. They count on television and the billions of dollars that television gives to the league, and they base that upon ratings. They want people to watch the games. And to your point, who wants to watch some of these guys, Mason Rudolph, or some of these? No offense to them, but you're right. We want to see the stars.
Right. It's a better game when the quarterbacks are healthy. Green Bay Packers a couple of years ago when Deshaun Kizer is playing. It's like, or Brett Hundley, I guess it was. It's like, now you got a Saturday night game with Brett Hundley on television and they don't score a touchdown. Is that better? Is that really what we want? Actually, I want to see Aaron Rodgers. And if it means a couple of really ticky-tack roughing the passer penalties on guys, I'll live with that. I think that's a decent trade-off.
Frank Schwab, Shutdown Corner, Yahoo Sports, joining us. Sean Payton just signed a contract extension. Now the Saints are banking on his brains and his bravado to lead him through this Drew Brees absence. What's reasonable? They've got a lot of pieces on this team. Teddy Bridgewater did have some success, but he said, I haven't played a meaningful game since 2015. That's a long time ago. What's reasonable for the Saints in the minimum 6-week absence of Drew Brees?
Yeah, and the schedule's not easy either. I mean, this is a tough deal for the Saints. I think the things working in the Saints' favor are that they do have a couple options. I think that it takes some. I don't see him as a full time every down quarterback, but he can do some things. He can help your offense in certain packages.
Yep.
And then Teddy, obviously. Yep. Look, Teddy's the highest paid backup quarterback in the NFL. It's time. Like, it's the New Orleans Saints sent a third round pick for him, which is a significant investment. Then they gave him $7.25 million over this year, another significant investment. People out there who are saying, Taysom Hill needs to play every down. Well, no, the Saints need to see what they have with Teddy Bridgewater. Give him a full week of practice with the starters in a game where they're going to be engaged, like we saw him last year. And let's see what he can do. Now, I will say, Teddy hasn't impressed me. I like Teddy a lot. I really do. I think he's a good, all accounts, a good guy. He's a great story. He's easy to root for. But when you really look at his body of work, kind of the legend of Teddy Bridgewater has kind of really outpaced the results. What's his calling card right now in the NFL? The fact that the Vikings won a division title the last year he was their quarterback. Well, yeah, he had 14 touchdowns in 16 games. That was Adrian Peterson in the defense. And since his devastating leg injury, he's basically played two games, and he hasn't looked good in either one. Now, there's excuses for that. The Saints week 17 last year weren't engaged in that. Last week, he comes in cold off the bench against a good Rams team. I get that. But I'm really – it's going to be interesting to see what the Saints do with Teddy Bridgewater, maybe Taysom Hill. We'll see. I think realistically – if they could just go 3-3, they would take it right now. If you told me, if you told Sean Payton, hey, Drew is missing six games, we're going to give you 3-3 right now, I think he would sign up for that, because that doesn't knock you out of the NFC South race. If you look at this division, it's a mess. I thought this was going to be one of the best divisions. It turned out to be kind of one of the worst divisions. So I think 3-3 and coming out of this thing with a 4-4 record, that puts them right in it. And if Breeze comes back, we don't know. I mean, what's 40 years old coming off a thumb injury? This isn't good. This isn't a sure thing that he's going to look like Drew Brees after 6 weeks. But if he does, if you're 4-4, you're kind of – I can't see anybody else in this division running away with it. Let's put it that way.
Good. All right, Frank Schwab, shutdown corner. Tonight, Tennessee at Jacksonville. The Jags are favored by 1.5. You got Gardner Minshew going up against Marcus Mariota. Is the Jalen Ramsey situation going to have any factor in this game whatsoever?
I kind of think it has to. I don't know. Maybe I'm just discounting the fact that these guys are professional and they do their jobs and they don't let things get to them. But the best player on the Jacksonville Jaguars on Monday demanded a trade, basically, a day after blowing up at his coach. How does that not impact you for a Thursday game? Like, how do you just, Jalen Ramsey's going to play his heart out tonight. Really? I guess. Like, I just don't see how this doesn't affect the Jacksonville Jaguars, much less that they have a backup quarterback who didn't really play well last week. I don't, and he's on a short week. I don't think the Titans are great by any means. They look really good week one, look a lot worse week two. But I kind of think that I can't figure out a way the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to look good tonight. There's too much going against them, and if the Tennessee Titans lose this game, they need to really look at themselves in the mirror. Maybe the Cleveland Browns need to look at themselves in the mirror, too, for losing by 30 to the Titans. Yeah. So I'm on the Titans. I think that they're going to win this pretty convincingly, actually.
Yeah. All right. The Buffalo Bills are 2-0, and now they get to play their home opener this week against Cincinnati. How the defense is really good. Josh Allen looks really, really good. Are you solid on the Bills this year?
I like them. I mean, it's going to be – I think it's next week the Patriots come to town. That's going to be a very interesting game. That's kind of your test. That's – hey, are you legit? Yeah. Then go and win this game. I mean, they were a team that was down 16-0 to the Jets in week one. They rallied. Good for them. But I don't know that I'm fully on board. But I think they're good. I think the defense was always going to be good. This was – the defense that had a lot of young talent, improved over the course of last season. You can kind of see the seeds being planted there. And – you know, the fact that they're 2-0 doesn't really surprise me. Beat the Jets and the Giants. You're the champion of MetLife Stadium, I guess. But, and I don't think the Bengals are a team that, you know, if they beat them this week to go 3-0, I'm not going to be exactly bumping them up to number 2 in my power rankings or anything. It's next week against the Patriots. First of all, let's see if they can beat the Bengals, because you need to beat the teams you should beat. And then let's see how they compete against the Patriots, because that's always going to be the test for anybody in the AFC East. And the Jets and Dolphins might lose 30-31 games between them. I mean, I don't know, but it's the Bills. If anybody's going to keep the Patriots honest this year, it's going to be the Buffalo Bills.
Nobody cares. Miami at Dallas. Pick your score on that one. I think Denver at Green Bay. I think pick your score on that one. Atlanta at Indianapolis. That's kind of interesting. Julio Jones has been terrific. Atlanta has been up and down. Indianapolis, I don't know. What do you think of that one real quick?
Yeah, Atlanta's really not impressed me yet. I mean, they won on Sunday night, and that's great, but the Eagles had a million injuries. I'm not impressed with it. I have been impressed with the Colts. I think they're playing really hard, and they're really well coached. I think they win. And by the way, I'm not fully counting out the Broncos in that game. I think the Broncos keep that close. I think the Packers, there's something wrong with their offense.
They
came out. You know, the Broncos came out, first three drives, they had 21 points on the board. Their last 11 drives, they didn't score and had something like 121 total yards. So I think the Broncos keep that one close. I'm not picking them to win, but I'll say that game's going to be a little more interesting than we think.
Keep it close. It's an 8-point advantage for the Packers. Maybe go under on that one. Okay, the game of the week's got to be Baltimore at Kansas City. Two really good offenses with two really good quarterbacks so far. Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes. The Chiefs making their Arrowhead debut this season. The crowd, you know, is going to be nuts. Can the Ravens defense keep this keep them in it?
Yeah, I love this game. This is a fun one. And then part of the reason, look, when we're in week three, we've seen two games, it sometimes becomes tough to judge a team. I was talking about the Bills a little bit ago. Well, what about the Ravens? They played the Dolphins, who are barely an NFL team at this point, and they beat the Cardinals at home by six. And the Cardinals aren't very good. So are the Ravens good? I don't know. Yeah. Like, I think they are. Lamar Jackson certainly looks good. He passes the eye test for sure. They're always well-coached. They're always competitive. But I think we're going to find out a lot about them on Sunday. I think the Chiefs are going to win. I think they're going to win pretty easily. I know that the Ravens gave them a heck of a game last year at Kansas City, and the Chiefs really kind of got lucky to win. But I'm not buying yet on the Ravens. Hey, if the Ravens can go into Kansas City, be more than competitive, like if they can be in that game in the final minutes like they were last year, I'll be very impressed. And hey, I'll buy into the Ravens at that point, but I need to see them do it against somebody other than the Dolphins or the Cardinals.
I'm with you. Frank Schwab, shutdown corner for Yahoo Sports, joining us. It's NFL week number three. Two teams that haven't looked at all that good so far this season. The Houston Texans are at the L.A. Chargers. Texans should have beaten the Saints, could have beaten the Saints. They didn't. Deshaun Watson is terrific. I don't know what else they've got. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, the Texans are such a weird team. They have, like, three legitimate all-time greats. And I really mean that. I think that J.J. Watt and DeAndre Hopkins for sure are Hall of Famers. And I truly believe Deshaun Watson is going to win an MVP award before he's done. I think he's fantastic.
Yeah,
and what else?
I do too.
What else do they have? It's really weird. It's like they have these three kind of transcendent players, superstars. Whether I believe that, you know, if you want to believe they're going to make Hall of Fame someday or not, that's fine. But let's all agree that they're superstars. They're truly superstars. But they're not. They're just one of these teams. Who's the fourth best player? Justin Reed, their safety, I guess. So they're a weird team for me to get a handle on. Like you said, they haven't played well, and the Chargers are beat up. It's just every year with the Chargers, it's something weird, and it's these crazy injuries, and now the holdout with Melvin Gordon, and you're losing guys left and right. They didn't look good last week. I think I'm going to pick the Texans. I just don't like what I've seen out of the Chargers so far. And when you take on this many injuries, it's just bad news. I mean, they are missing a lot of really, really good players. So I'm probably going to pick. I think I'm going to pick the Texans in this one, even though I haven't been impressed with them either.
Which game do you give the Saints a better opportunity to win? At Seattle on Sunday or home against the Dallas Cowboys, who've been playing great? I mean, you talk about three back-to-back difficult games. Gee, the Rams, Seattle, Dallas, my gosh.
Yeah, I would guess that they have a better shot against the Cowboys just because it's at home. I'll say this about the Cowboys. Everybody's you know, penciling them in for a Super Bowl almost. Well, they beat the Giants. Okay, Giants stink. They beat the Redskins. The Redskins stink. Those might be two of the five worst teams in football, right? So, again, it's tough early in the season when you only have a couple games to go off a team where you just say, even the Packers offense, which I kind of said isn't playing that well. Okay, well, they played the Bears and the Vikings. Those are two of the best defenses in football. And then so the Broncos. So, you know, I mean, I look at the Cowboys and I say, yeah, they passed the eye test. They look good. Dak looks unbelievable. Can they beat a good team? It's not going to be this week. They play the Dolphins, so I'm not going to have any answers on them after 3 weeks either. Right. I think the Saints will give them a game. It's going to be the Cowboys' first real game, really, this season. Okay. That will be a really, really interesting game. Let's see how the Saints look this week. I don't think the Saints win this week. I hate to tell you, but it's just but I can't give them no shot either. It's not like the Seahawks are blowing everybody away. Like they beat Mason Rudolph and the Steelers by 2 points, and they beat the Bengals by 1 point. We saw how bad the Bengals were last week. So, I don't know. That's going to be an interesting game for both teams. Let's say that.
Interesting game and an important early game for two teams. The Rams, 3-point favorites on the road at Cleveland. The Rams, 2-0. They've been really good on defense. The Browns, I don't know. Is this the week the Browns get it done?
I don't know. I fully understand anybody who didn't watch Monday night. That wasn't a great game by any means. I'm sitting there watching it saying, yeah, the Jets are just, they're down to their third quarterback. They're not going to do anything, and they're probably poorly coached. The Browns didn't look impressive to me at all. Like, no, I was sitting there like, where are the Browns? Like, if you're playing Luke Falk and you're up at one point, you know, they're up like 13-3, 16-3 at some point, right. And then Odell Beckham breaks a long one, and that kind of did it. Other than that play, they did not play well. Their defense did, but who do the Jets even have at this point? I'm really unimpressed with the Browns. And again, I know this doesn't work where you say, you know, team A, team B, B, team C, and that means, but you look and you say, week one, they lost 43-13 to the Titans. Week two, the Titans lost at home to the Colts. So how good are the Browns? I don't know. I'm picking the Rams. I think the Rams are a better team here. I'm worried about Freddie Kitchens as a head coach. I think he might just have too much on his plate. That offense does not look good. They haven't protected Baker Mayfield. They haven't done anything near what I thought they'd be doing on really on either side of the ball. They got 43 points in week one to the Titans. Is their defense that great? I've just been unimpressed with the Browns, and I keep saying this about so many teams, but I kind of need to see it. I need to, before I'm going to really buy into the Browns, like I did preseason. I did. I was on the Browns bandwagon. But now that I've seen them a couple times, before I buy back in, I need to see them play well against a team like the Rams here. And if they do, hats off, and I'll change my opinion about the Browns. But right now, very unimpressed.
Hopefully next week when we talk, we will not be talking about another injured quarterback. Maybe we'll be talking about Jalen Ramsey playing for some other team by that time. Who knows with the NFL? It's absolutely keeping you guys busy, keeping us reading all about it. So keep up the great work. Thank you so much, Frank. Enjoy week three of the NFL, my friend.
Definitely will do.
All right, buddy. Take care. Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. We'll take a quick timeout here. That brought to you by Peterbilt. Peterbilt of Louisiana with offices in Lafayette, Lake Charles, Baton Rouge, and New Orleans. It is the goal of every driver out there to own a Peterbilt because it's the best, reliable, dependable, comfortable, great resale value. It looks good. It drives great. It does. When the Tigers, in fact, their equipment truck is on the way to Nashville as we speak. As we speak. You know how they're getting there? With a Peterbilt truck. It's the best in the business. We'll be back. History lesson and birthday wishes here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, finishing touches. Let's go quickly to our history lesson on the day. It was September 19th, 1947. Jackie Robinson, the second baseman for the Brooklyn Dodgers, was named Rookie of the Year. It was the first year that this award became a national award. Robinson's legacy grew and grew, and now the Rookie of the Year award renamed in his honor in 1987. Jackie Robinson, Rookie of the Year, September 19th, 1947. If today is your birthday, September 19th, it's a great day. Happy birthday to you and yours. You share with the likes of happy 71st birthday, terrific actor Jeremy Irons. Happy 55th birthday, terrific singer Trisha Yearwood. Happy 45th birthday, Jimmy Fallon. Happy 28th birthday, C.J. McCollum of the Portland Trailblazers. Happy 21st birthday to Trey Young of the Atlanta Hawks. And a special happy 30th birthday to the Springer Dinger, George Springer of the Astros, celebrating a birthday today. Special thanks to all of our guests, Brody Miller of The Athletic, Chris Vanini, Frank Schwab talking the NFL. Special thanks to CD, my producer extraordinaire, for getting all that sound put together. Tomorrow, a Football Friday. So that means Weather Report, the Nickel Report, Jordy and the Judge, George Faust, Larry Holder on the Saints, and Monday's Headlines on a Friday. So come and join us tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Thanks for listening to our partners that make it possible. We couldn't do it without you. Until tomorrow, I'm Jordy Hultberg. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.